Robert, Chris, welcome. Robert, talk a little bit first about your role at the LEGO Group. What do you do there? Introduce yourselves and let the audience know your particular areas of expertise.
Yeah, so Robert Fuenzalida.
Fuenzalida.
So I'm with LEGO, the LEGO Group. I've been with them for about 2 years. I am heading up security for the Americas region. Also, part of my responsibility starting this year was heading up confidentiality and novelty protection, which all entails brand protection, IT security, all that type of good stuff. So we've been rebranding our security at LEGO. It's a very new function at LEGO. We had the first official security organization start up about 3.5 years ago, so a year and a half before I started. So before that, LEGO had no security department whatsoever. So it was a very interesting right now trying to sell what we need to do and get buy-in from the C-suite, which I think is a good good reason why I'm up here.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome. Well, welcome. Thank you.
Yep.
Mr. Taylor, let's tell the people a little bit about what you do, some of your history, and what you're currently doing.
I think we can accomplish that. So I did about 17 years in the federal government where I provided security support and designed security programs for multiple government agencies. Eventually grew up and ran away to do consultancy on a global scale where companies would hire me to come in and do incident response or design programs or do risk assessments for them, and that was everything up to Fortune 100s, Fortune 50s even in some cases. And then in a moment of weakness, I came out to LA to start supporting media and entertainment. And I now run a small consultancy firm where I provide outsourced CISO, outsourced security operations to small and medium-sized security vendors, or not security vendors, but media and entertainment vendors that support this industry.
Okay, but you worked at Warner, right?
Correct. I was a director of security architecture at Warner Brothers for
a little bit. Perfect. And I'm a loud talker, so you're gonna have to turn me down, Evan.
Gotcha.
Because I'll ring this room out like nobody's business. Let's get ready to rumble. Okay. So I think first and foremost, when we talk about C-suite and your board, right? It's basically you're either going to educate them about a subject, right, that they're interested in. Right, or you're asking them for money to support your endeavors, whether it's your business unit, or you're asking them for money to support their own safety and security. When you talk about a board, right, and you institute some board practices. This isn't necessarily an easy task, because sometimes, depending upon that education element, you're gonna have to come armed, right, with as much as you know about a product. So I think this is an interesting conversation also because it's something that we do here at a very, like a 50,000 foot level. Oh, hey, I heard about this in blockchain. We should investigate it and move it forward. But cybersecurity, multifaceted, you know, the sand is at our feet. It's always changing, and the threat is always evolving, right? And you start bringing up terms like advanced persistent threat, and you could freak your board out, right? Or freak your executive team out, right? Depending upon what your objective is. So my question to you first, Robert, on the LEGO side is, is there too much information? Is there something where somebody needs to go in with the right amount of information in order to achieve the objective of why they're asking? Or is there a TMI issue here that might turn your company or your board off to the true goal?
Yeah, so I think it goes back to having the security field at LEGO being such a new endeavor for the corporation. So at times, there was a lot of information, and it was too much. And again, speaking in all this in our terms, it goes over everyone's head. So they kind of sit there and go, okay, I don't understand, so on to the next topic. So what we've done is evolve the whole communication piece and try to simplify it. And we need to talk, especially to our board and to our C-suite, who maybe don't have the best understanding of what the threats are that we understand them as. So we have to as we say, talk in plain, simple English to them. And it's actually, the strategy's working. So we're able to, inform them, and they're able to understand what we're doing and see exactly what we're talking about and where the threats are coming in. And we use a lot of real life examples and show them, and so this is what's happening, and this is what we're talking about when we talk about X, Y, Z, or whatever, and it's working. It's working good for us.
Yeah, and some of the other industries I've supported, the boards can be very technologically ignorant. And the, it's very much a rarity that you get somebody on a board that actually has a security background or even a technology background. So especially in like the banking or the healthcare industries, a lot of the board members I was talking to can barely check their emails, and I'm trying to convince them why they need to protect themselves from advanced persistent threats and ransomware, and they're not even sure what those topics mean. So it is vitally important that the person who's going to be presenting to your board be able to speak English. And it seems like such a simple requirement, but it is actually really hard in the tech industry to find someone who can talk about those complex topics in English. And if you can't properly sell the concept and get their buy-in, then they're not going to be able to change the culture of their company and actually drive security. And that's the other vitally important thing with this approaching the board thing, is it's got to be a top-down drive. Because if it's a security engineer coming in from the bottom saying security is important, they'll never get the resources or the time, the money, or the equipment that they need to accomplish what they want. But if you can sell the board on the importance of security and why it's there and how it will protect their business so that it doesn't cost them more money to not have security, then it becomes a top-down driven approach, and that security engineer will get whatever resources he needs.
You know, again, the other thing is how do you deconstruct something that might be so complex and might transcend all these business units? And again, you know, the C-suite is also important in here, because sometimes the C-suite is very educated. You talk to your CTO, and they're darn smart, right? That's the whole point, right? So, is this something, this isn't an infographic world. It is, but it isn't, right? I mean, ultimately, how do you socialize such a complex concept when it's something as broad as like you said, phishing, ransomware. I mean, there's so many buzzwords and terms that they hear, especially around things in the news. I mean, don't you, in theory, have to kind of cut through the clutter and emphasize why this is ultra critical for the organization and themselves?
Yeah, absolutely.
Bite-sized nuggets?
Yeah, taking it in small chunks is vitally important. And bringing it into real-world analogies that are applicable to their business and are something that they can actually grasp and get a frame hold on is vital.
Yeah, and one of the big lessons learned at LEGO was in the past, and going to your bite-sized pieces comment there, the strategy was before, years ago when they first started, they wanted to tackle the whole pie. And they wanted to go after everything. And they came with this strategy and said, this is our problem, we need to do it. We need all these resources. And everyone was, oof. So now, and especially this is a cultural thing too, as LEGO being a Danish company, I think that's extremely important understanding the thought process of the C-suite. And we're privately held too, still owned by the original family. So you need to, in my opinion, really understand the culture that they come from and their mindset. And also, going down to the bite-sized pieces, eventually decided to, once we got a team in place and the right people, decided, okay, this strategy's not working, we need to break this down into different streams and different attacks and different ways of approaching it. And that's what we're doing now, and it's very successful, as opposed to trying to tackle the whole ball at one time, which, it's again, going back to security being very new at LEGO, it's a very difficult task, and as we all know, very expensive as well. So when they see the whole ball of wax price tag, eyes open up, and once you break it down and speak the plain English, then it resonates a lot better with them.
It's also helpful if you can do priority weighting on the tasks and hit the ones that are the most return on investment first. The Center for Internet Security publishes a top 20 list every year, and based on industry feedback, they resort the list and reshuffle it every year. So the top 20 controls on their list are priority weighted on what gives you the most bang for the buck. And if you can implement the top three, you will have raised your security posture considerably, and then you start working on the next three and just slowly work your way down the list. And then you eventually are able to go back and map it to MPA best practices or HIPAA or whatever other control framework you want to map it to. And they'll all map back to them, and then you find the little gaps of what's left over after you've accomplished the top 20 most important things.
Yeah, and to that point too is breaking them down and having the quick wins is the strategy that we took as well. And we identified the two that we can win right off the bat and would have a big impact in the company, and it's and that opened up the eyes. And something that was another part of it, something that the C-suite and the board and the family could actually see and understand what we did from A to B, and it was simple in a way, as opposed to the very technical stuff. So it was good.
But speaking from the experience also of, you know, just a few years in, right? Is this something also where the budget, you know, taking a boil of the ocean approach, right? They're saying, all right, let's allocate X, right? Let's go for it. Let's just clean it up. But then there's the practical reality of, like, you can throw all the money that you want at this and it's never going to be 100% cleaned up, right? I mean, I think that's the nature of cybersecurity. It's like an ongoing war. We got to keep things fresh. We got to keep the troops fresh. We got to keep, you know, where's the front line? It keeps moving, right? The idea is it ultimately budget or is it more, you know, when you say prioritize things, quick wins based on ROI, that's a budgeting decision, right? But is it something also where, is it where it's the priority of the actual threat, the incident, the exposure, the weakness, the vulnerability?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, I mean, boards will understand cost. They will understand enterprise risk. They'll understand intellectual property. And in public companies, if you erode a certain percent of your business wealth, you have to disclose that and become a big public phenomenon. I mean, what are the, so if you have a dashboard of metrics, what are you socializing to that level? Is it unit cost of security, as an example? What is it?
Good question.
Yeah, and it's not always an easy question to answer, too, because a lot of the costs get to be very fuzzy, and a lot of it is very subjective. You know, we moved you from high to medium, and how you really weight that, because somebody just sort of made up where that boundary line is. It's very important to build good metrics and to measure off of them. I've got entire books on how to build proper metrics that we won't be able to get into in the 16 minutes remaining. But one of the things you can look at is to tie dollar amounts to all of it. So for that, one of the things, just as an example, I'll do a series of metrics tracking the number of times the companies had to respond to a malware outbreak or a ransomware outbreak, and then apply monetary cost to it, because your response to hiring an IR team and to the extra overtime spent and all the total cost of the response to all those malware incidents, and then here's what your updated, better, improved antivirus is costing you, and now you're seeing less money spent on response activity. So you can actually drive a lot of these to actual money as long as you're collecting the metrics ahead of time to be able to measure the effect of the control as you implement it. And that is incredibly effective when talking to boards because, as you said, they understand money.
But is this, I think your question was great as well, right? And maybe Robert, you can talk about a couple major buckets, right, in terms of what are you going to ask for? And by the way, this should be considered open question. I shouldn't turn my back to this side of the ground. This should also be, raise your hand if you got a question for these guys, please offer. We're almost done. Yeah, get the line over there. Some buckets around this. I mean, is it something where it's, this is the classic physical security, information security, right? And and it's like we almost carve it up and segment it, and then you have these business units that, okay, the physical unit is run by an ex-FBI guy, and the IS unit is run, by a super techie, awesome, nerd genius, right? And it ends up being like a caricature of itself, but the reality is it's all fundamentally, right? It's cybersecurity, right? I mean, when you think about it, where is our future really going, right? I mean, this is an issue. And I mean, Lego's a very physical product. You have a lot of physical products out in this and in the real world and selling them for dollars, right?
And we have many, like you said, we use a standard approach too of, physical, cyber, all that kind of stuff too, but communicating to the board and to the family using metrics, it's right now, that's huge. It's all about the metrics for us now. And one of the big drivers is for us, brand reputation and impact that something could have if, we're a toy company and we're really expanding into the digital space like everyone else. And, example, the Lego Life app, that was a huge one, and that's winning all sorts of prizes for this and that and da-da-da. But, one of the things were metrics on, what happens if X happens to Lego Life or this happens or whatever, what impact is that going to have? And that's been driving a lot of, or helping us support a lot of our decisions that we're making with funding and getting budget and budget allocation and all that. So it's the brand reputation is very, very big. And again, it's going back to what I said a little while ago, it's a cultural thing where we understand as a security organization that from a Danish culture perspective, that's huge. And not only that, but it's everyone. But that is a big driver and a big motivator for being for the budgets being allocated to where they need to be going. And it's something that the board and family, it's the core of our business. If that something goes wrong there, then it's detrimental to our organization, and they understand that.
I want to follow up with that because it's also how do you put a value on your brand, right? And then what do you risk to protect that brand, right? I'll risk everything to protect that brand. That brand's me. Let's follow up on that after we get the question from.
I was curious if you have any strategies for communicating that digital threats are often asymmetric, and that if you sort of tackle the top three, you might have a corner case that can still do a lot of damage.
I mean, that's Look, I mean, by the way, this is the nature of the threat that has evolved into what we have to deal with, right? And it's not also as if we haven't been proactive in terms of our security and our budgeting and what we're doing, but yeah, I think you realize that it's the never-ending story.
Yeah, that one's tough because, well, the first part of it I'll address, the Australian equivalent of the NSA, the AUSD, I believe the ASD is their acronym, they put out a top four control list. And they say you implement four controls, you mitigate 96% of the attacks. And the top three actually align with the CIS's top three. The fourth is the one they differ on. It's inventory of your equipment, a good vulnerability scanning program, and the fourth control that they ask for is an application whitelisting everywhere. So they say, according to the Australian Signal Directorate, if you implement those four controls, you'll get rid of 96% of the attacks that are going to come at you that they have responded to throughout all Australian companies. Now, and as you pointed out, there's always those corner cases. What about the things that are getting past those four and are still affecting them? You can do everything right and still get compromised. Look at the amount of money our federal government throws into security, and yet they still lose the plans to fighter jets on a fairly regular basis. This is one of those situations where you need to raise the bar enough that the bad guys are going to move to a softer target and shift off to somebody else. When you're the federal government and you're protecting fighter plans that the Chinese government really, really wants, it's going to be a persistent attack that's going to keep coming until they eventually find the hole. But if the majority of the other attacks that are taking place are really just throwing out a really wide net and are going after what actually bites on that net. So if you just raise your security bar enough, they'll move on to something different. And that was what compromised HBO, that's what compromised Larson Studios. These weren't directed targeted attacks, it was targets of opportunity because their bar was low enough that that attack actually worked there.
Is this also a macro micro thing, right? In the sense that, right, you know, how do you protect your home from getting broken into? You buy an alarm, right? I mean, right, you put the AED sign or whatever in your front yard, right? It's a turn, you get a dog, right? I mean, ultimately, those are, and that, by the way, that's very interesting, right? Because you're essentially talking about that outlying corner being very small, right? But the implications of what happens if that's the area where they enter, right? It could compromise the entire system, right? So that's also skewed and weighted.
It is.
Right? Because they don't understand, oh, by the way, yes, that little 4% access could gain access to the entire 100%, because not everybody also puts in kind of the dams and the stopgap methods to stop it from escalating to essentially like this zoning pack, right? I mean, that was devastating, right? Is that something also that, you know, you would want to tell the family that owns, like, oh, I wouldn't want to be that guy, I'm sorry, right? I mean, like, where it's like, oh yeah, and P.S., by the way, no matter how much money you spend, you're screwed, right? I mean, and to be blunt, right? But the reality is how do you convey those messages while being also positive and saying, this is something that we can do and we can be proactive about? That's the other issue as well. And by the way, that was the excellent question in terms of buckets. But I think ultimately this is the existential cybersecurity dilemma, and I was looking to see where Ben was.
No.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Maybe more for Robert. With you guys moving into the kind of video space that you are, can you kind of hide some of the costs behind digital rights management and encryption and things like that so that you can get the budget you need by saying, well, Ninjago videos, blah, blah, blah? Or is that doing something that really is too sneaky and the board will figure it out one day and get mad at you?
Don't, yeah, I'm giving you the right to plead the fifth on that.
Yeah.
Don't, off the record.
So the sneaky part was good that you said, because that it might have been a strategy someone had beforehand and it backfired. So we are not taking that, and we're transparent with everything we do, and we feel with Lego, with our company, that's the best way to drive everything, being as transparent as possible and just lay everything out on the table and say, this is what's required, this is what we need to do, the reasons why, and again, in plain English, and then, you know, the decision is up to them, you know, and the decision is being, in our opinion, being made the correct way now. So, and I think being transparent and not trying to hide stuff, especially, and again, it goes back to the whole cultural thing, trying to hide really, and if someone on the board or C-suite actually starts getting the feeling of, this guy's, you know, trying to, what are they doing, as opposed to putting all the cards on the table, it backfires. So.
Another quick question. Also, you know, I would also say, you know, the idea is, are you also then transparent on the flip side when something happens, right? Because, you know, I think in the old days, there, an incident would be there, and you know, you're frozen, you're like, oh, you know, this could be major, right? This could be bad, yeah. I gotta call somebody, right? I don't think you reach out to your board.
No, but, you know, for us, being such a young department, and again, not having a formal security department 5 years ago, it's easy for us to say, because it's like, we go, well, you know what, there was nothing there and we're building everything, so what do you expect? Again, being a transparent organization, we tell them exactly what happened, this is why it happened, and this is how we need to fix it.
10-15 years ago, a lot of my customers would sweep breaches under the rug because they didn't want the reputational hit. Uber's the most recent example of how horribly that can backfire.
Yeah.
Because Uber's in an even worse position now because it eventually came out that they were breached and they hid it. So you want to be open about it nowadays. You want to be outright forthcoming, and you want to share that we've had this incident and we're on top of it. You don't have to give out details, but you can say, we've had an incident and we're handling it, and that gives the consumers and the audience at large the confidence that you really are handling it Whereas if you say nothing, then they start guessing, and they're always going to guess that you have no clue what you're doing. Right? The other half of that is GDPR adds teeth. If you're not doing your disclosures correctly, you'll start getting fined.
Yep, indeed. I mean, that's a whole other twist. Let's go with this question right now.
Yes. I've done warping in the past with exercises and things like that, and all of a sudden, hands-on experience and actually even time-facing it. Have you done any customized, I'll call it warping, just for lack of a better word?
We're in the starting phases of doing that. We haven't yet, because again, we're just starting to get all of our, we're getting the buy-in now from the C-suite and from the board and from the family. So that's the next phase of what we were going to do, because at first, you know, we wanted to get them to understand exactly what the problem is in plain English. And now going into, you know, our strategy and everything, that's part of it that we're going to start doing, but we haven't done any yet. But it's absolutely, and myself and all my colleagues that work for LEGO that are in the security department, that's a necessity. We need to do it and need to be prepared and need to run the simulations or whatever it is that we're doing and have the practice and be ready when it, because it's going to happen.
I think that's also something where you leverage also your partners, right? Yeah. I can't think of any major cloud provider that doesn't have red team, blue team type of war games internally, right? It's just about also how in tune are you with them and what they're doing on the testing side. Because it's one thing to say, well, you know, I've got my SLA and I'm not I don't have to worry about this. But the reality is you're in the same boat. If something, you know, happens to them, it happens to you. And I think that's also something from an enculturation process where you're not going to bring that up into the board, right? In terms of trying to explain to them what a red team, blue team war game scenario, they'll get it, right? But they'll be like, war games, the movie? No.
They understand fire drills, and they understand the importance of why we need to practice getting people out of the building so that when there's a real fire, we know how to do it efficiently. If you're not practicing your incident response plan, you're not going to realize the shortcomings in the plan. You're not going to realize that your call tree's out of date and you don't have the right phone numbers to the right people, and you're not going to realize that the tree actually references tools that you don't have anymore. So those exercises are vital as part of both an exercise and drill just to keep everybody familiar with what's happening, because when your hair is on fire is not the right time to learn how to do those tasks.
Exactly.
And it's also vital as a training tool to get everybody kind of, you know, conditioned into what's going to happen if something were to really happen.
Right. Quick wrap up, because I think we're out of time. But right, the idea also is this policy, right? Procedure, right? Business continuity and disaster recovery shouldn't be something that you visit, you know, once every year, right? That's kind of old school. Like, what happens if this whole place burns down? You know, essentially the cybersecurity equivalent of that is almost every day. Right? You don't think about that every day with a physical facility like that. You put all your protections in place. You're like, okay, we can have that fire drill once a month. But this is something that I think persistence is the portion of it. So policy, procedure, any other recommendations? Budget, plain English, anything else?
Understanding the culture.
Corporate culture, that's a good answer. Yeah. Perfect way to end it. All right, sorry.
Training.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Educational, and not just at the board, but throughout the entire company. If you can convince the company why security is important and get them to buy into security, they won't try to bypass the controls you put in place. They'll understand, I'm doing this because, and then they'll accept the more complex password or the whatever other control you drop in.
All right, awesome. All right, we're out of time. Thank you, gentlemen, so much. Chris, thanks for, Robert, sorry for mispronouncing your name. Give him a hand. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you.